Hello there, everybody. My name is Bea Bonner, and you're listening to Community Voices right here on NPR Illinois. And today, I am talking about Spencer Theater Company's production of Frankenstein. Joining me today to talk about the show is Eden Lyons, who portrays the creature, and Ted Keelan, who portrays Victor. Thank you so much for you both being here today.
Thank you so much.
Well, we want to get to know you two a little bit better, so Eden, I think we'll go to you first. Tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're from.
Yeah, well, I grew up in Chatham, so right outside of here. I grew up doing the school shows there and being in band and choir. They have a great arts program over there. So I was lucky enough to really get a lot of training from a young age. My father is very into acting. So he was kind of my first acting coach and led me all throughout my life. I briefly went to a theater program in Decatur.
Wow.
And I took a step back just for, you know, personal reasons and really got into this theater community in Springfield that I have always kind of admired, but felt a little bit like outside looking in.
Yeah.
And I just the last few years here have just been, it felt like an explosion of being myself and being in this community. So I am from right here.
Well, I've heard you've done a lot with Spencer Theater Company in the past. What other shows have you done?
I have. My first show with them was a couple years ago. It was Nightfall with Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh, I think I saw that.
It was wonderful.
Was that with the Raven?
Yes, the Raven. Okay, yeah. My fiance now actually played the Raven in that production. So that Avi, my fiance, is in this one as well. And I love that we in this community have so many opportunities to do that with our friends and our family. And it's just a great community here. So, yes, I also did Death of a Salesman in February.
Yeah, they just did that not so long ago.
Yeah, the time kind of blurs together. I've been back to back for a while now. We did that. I played Stanley the Waiter. I was the comedic relief in that very heavy show. And it was just a fun role. Both of those shows were directed by John Sivak, another fantastic director in Springfield. And I could not be happier that this production is with such a great company and a great team.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad to have you here and to finally meet you.
Thank you.
This is great. Now, Ted, I don't know you. You have to tell me who you are, a little bit about yourself and where you're from.
Well, I was born here, lived at other places and came back, always coming back. And I went to Sangamon State. Mm-hmm. And I was here and I graduated when it turned into UIS.
Yeah.
Very tumultuous times back then. But I got my degree and no one was here. It was in the summer. But my friends came and we had a showing at the gallery over there.
Mm-hmm.
About 20 years ago, I got the job at the museum to be one of the actors.
Wow.
Yeah.
At the which museum?
The Abraham Lincoln Presidential.
That's what I thought. Okay, yeah.
And that not only put me in sort of a theater situation, but it also allowed me to have nights free, which was essential if you're going to do a play.
Yeah.
Because of all the rehearsing that has to happen at night. So you have to have a day job. There were other pursuits. I did music and I like to paint and everything, do activism. I limited my theater involvement to mostly Shakespeare or historical plays.
Ah, okay.
It isn't that I didn't want to do other plays. It's just that it takes so much out of you, so much work.
It really is.
I thought those are the kind of things that would be a once in a lifetime experience. Mm-hmm. Ever since in 2007, one of the other ghosts was Dennis Rendleman.
Yeah.
He was big in the theater. He cast me as Ross and then Macbeth in 2007 in the Hoagland. And that got me realizing that you can read the play, you can watch someone else do the play, but when you do it yourself, you're inside the mind of Shakespeare. You understand all this stuff we talked about unlocks for you every time, even if you do it again. It's like, oh, I see how that fits there. Every time there's a Shakespeare, I think that I'm on that short list of how we're going to fill the cast. You know, they call Ted. He likes the Shakespeare.
I wish I was like you because Shakespeare is hard for me.
See, I find it easier. And you said that one time, too. I find it easier sometimes than regular, you know, discourse.
Yeah, we were in a production of Macbeth out at Theater in the Park last summer. And I portrayed Lady Macduff and he was Ross again. So we actually had a scene together.
Oh, so you all have acted together before.
Yes, we have. We also were in Twelfth Night out at Theater in the Park this past summer as you were kind of the villain of the play, Malvolio.
Malvolio.
And he was like my mortal enemy in that play as well, although it's a comedy, so it's much more lighthearted. And we just kept cracking jokes the whole time about going from that to this, and it's so parallel but different at the same time.
Well, this is fun, too.
We were the butlers in Importance of Being Earnest.
Yes, how could I forget?
I did that show before. It was a long time ago. I was Cecily Cardew.
Yes, that's a great part.
Wow, that's a great part.
Yes, love her.
Great play.
She's wonderful. It's a classic.
Well, now we're getting into spooky season.
Ooh.
So Frankenstein is coming up and I want to talk about that a little bit. Now, this is the stage play by Nick Dear of Mary Shelley's 1818 novel Frankenstein. So everybody knows about Frankenstein, the monster, but I will admit, I didn't know too much about the actual stage adaptation. So can you tell us a little bit about the show and give us a little bit more detail into the synopsis, and whoever wants to go first can take it?
Yeah, so it's very unique, I would say, in the adaptations of Frankenstein that are out there, because we all know plenty of them. Obviously, specifically, the first one comes to mind is Boris Karloff. Yeah. And most adaptations, he doesn't speak. That's actually one of the main questions people have asked me when I tell them I'm playing this part is, do you have any lines? And it's so, I mean, it's a valid question. I mean, it's so interesting. If you read the novel, he's got the creature has a, you know, exposition of sorts in the middle of the novel that is just a long, essentially what feels to me like a monologue about what he has been through. And I like to say that this version of the story is that expanded into the whole play.
Yeah. Well, it's from the creature's perspective, which makes it very unique too.
Yes, we follow his first breath into the story. There are a few scenes that he's not present in, but he is pretty much the focus. We're following his experience. So I feel it's very unique in that way. And Nick Deer's writing is just fantastic. Yeah. I mean, I feel it's very British. It's got them classical influences, but it just drips with that gothic, that spooky feeling. It's wonderful. I love the script itself.
Well, I want to talk about Victor for a little bit, because Victor is very interesting in the stage play. I think you see Victor as the creator, but also kind of the destroyer. So, Ted, I wanted to ask you, how do you kind of deal with those moral dilemmas?
Well, you know, there's a light and shadow to everything and every person. We're complicated. So it's. I found myself doing the same thing I usually do, and Mark agrees. He told me to do it. I said, yes, I agree. But it's to find the other side than the obvious side for the character and make sure that that's there so you have dynamic range. So if no one in this play sympathizes with the creature, it wouldn't work. That's the idea, but it's about the creature from the perspective. But also with Victor, Mark and I both thought that he should have some elements and times where we do want to sympathize with him, but then that makes the tragedy more tragic.
Yeah. Mm.
And so everything, it sings in a louder, more precise way if you handle it one way or the other. For example, we talk about the National Theatre play in London, and they did it in, what was it, how did he say, like in a very theatrical way?
Yeah. Mm.
Is that what he said? But we're doing it in more of a dramatic way, if you will. You know, so
explain that. What does that mean?
Well, it unlocks some things. In the script, it really does sound like Elizabeth and Victor are almost bickering with each other, and Mark wanted to make it warmer. And when we did it, I found that it was so interesting how that worked, even with the same words. It just depends on how you say it.
Yeah.
You know? And so, and also, as Eden said too, notice the creature is almost like Victor's inner child.
Yeah.
And when ironically, in not understanding what love is, he creates life, and then all his love or ability to love goes into that creature somehow.
Yeah.
You know? And then so when they're talking, they're really actually like looking in a mirror.
It's like a parallel.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
But it's like a mirror though, because it's the same, but it's the reverse.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That's heavy.
Yeah. Mm. And so we got to think about it. And he's torn between, you know, the murders that happen and then just being in awe, not just of what he did, but that it even, the creature itself, you know, it just keeps unfolding. So that's the irony. There's this beauty in the center of it. And it's surprising to find.
There's, so many great themes in the show, like you just touched on, the parent-child creator-created relationship. There's how society will treat their most vulnerable. There's so many themes in this.
I even think, like, the science evolution, you know, how we deal with, like, the pursuit of human knowledge, but are there limitations? Are there consequences to that pursuit? So let's talk about some of the themes. So how do you think this show relates to society right now? What are people going to take away? Eden, we'll go to you first, and then Ted, I'll come back to you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have seen in the media a lot, and it's something that I've experienced in my own life, strain with a parental figure. You know, the concept of people going no contact with their parents is something that, to me, I've seen just exploding in social conversation recently. And I feel very strongly that that is at the forefront of this play. What, you know, the creature says many times that he didn't choose to be here and he doesn't understand how it happened. And he feels completely abandoned by the person who he feels chose that for him. And now he's also experiencing these consequences of that decision from all these other people, basically every person he comes across.
Yeah.
And he's constantly trying to learn. He's constantly wondering why. It's that pursuit of truth, which I feel like so many different topics of conversation politically, socially right now, it's the pursuit of truth. Mm. And that is the through line of the entire, of the creature's whole journey to me. It is knowledge and truth and what is an understanding of just the most basic level human things. Not just first, it's, you know, how do I get up off the floor?
Right.
And then it's, you know, how do I just grapple with this existential pit that I have inside of me that I feel like I was born with? And that's something that I relate to very heavily. So I feel like other people who just can feel like they've got so much depth to them and their experience will take lots away from that story.
Well, that's what I kind of wanted to get into, because on the surface level, like I said, everybody knows the monster, but we don't really know the story. So, Ted, did you kind of have an understanding of the deeper meanings of the story before you entered into the show?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the whole thing is about life and death and beauty and ugliness and all the polarities that we deal with. The polar opposites, they're really, I always say, it's like a syzygy, which is an astronomical term when two things look like one.
Yeah.
Mm. It's one thing that looks like two.
Yeah.
You know, wow. The light and dark is just dark, is just the absence of light. And so he doesn't know how to love, but ironically, in pursuing truth, creates love and truth in this creature who ironically is ugly and everybody hates, responds to with hate for surfacial reasons, for very subjective and unfair reasons, especially considering the backdrop of that is how intelligent the creature is, how fast it learned in 1 year how to talk. I mean, we're supposed to not just say that's plot armor, but also that's what happened, that the creature was, that it was that much of a success, the experiment. You know, that's the irony too, is that it wasn't all just a failure, but yet ultimately it was, because he separated his own ability to love and his own inner child. And like, it wasn't just his child. There's that sort of, it looks like that relationship, you know, they play with that. And the creature wants him to be proud of him and all that. But it's very specifically his inner child. It's not his outer child, right? It's his inner child. And so when he's talking, it's like he's talking to himself, like we said before, you know, and so it's a very psychological, you know, and I knew it was going to be like that, because that's what Mary Shelley had in mind. Yeah. She was trying to talk about the times and the Industrial Revolution and where we were headed, eventually just being able to cure everything. Well, what if we did live forever? It's kind of that.
Yeah.
Like with vampires.
Well, that's a little scary.
The vampires always say,
there's the show.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't think I want to live forever. Don't kill me right now, but I don't want to live forever.
Exactly, I would not take that pill.
No. Now, for surprising elements, now we know how Frankenstein has been traditionally portrayed. So I want to know about costuming. Will we see something interesting? What's going on with that? You know, sometimes when I see Frankenstein, he looks green or gray or I don't know. What are they going to do to you?
Well, to a surprise of many people, we're probably going to keep it. There's going to be a spectacle. Do not get me wrong. It's going to be a visual spectacle. Absolutely. But it's going to be a little more toned down than maybe we conjure.
It seems like more realism.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. It's definitely, we want to portray the quality of somebody who has been through extensive amounts of surgery. Mm-hmm. Somebody who is, you know, there's been that TikTok trend of Uncanny Valley recently. It's almost like that, where they are distinctly human, but there's just really something off about it. So I feel lucky that I've been placed. It's a lot of trust when they say, okay, we're going to tone down the makeup, so you have to sell. So a lot of that energy is going to be coming from my performance, which I absolutely love. But the costumes are absolutely going to be a spectacle. We've got lots of different settings. The creature specifically has obviously a growth journey, a whole life of growth contained in this play. So his clothes are also going to evolve in a very specific manner, along with his experience of the world. We also have our fabulous castmate, Nia Tiller, who is playing Elizabeth. Obviously, she's going to have gowns of the time, which I'm very excited about. I can't wait to see them and that vision. The theater we're performing in, Hoagland's Theater 3, it is one of my favorite theaters in town.
It's spooky in
there. I love it in there. I did my first play in there in 2018. Nia actually directed that play. And that was my first role ever. So it's a cool full circle moment for both of us. And it's just, I can't say enough about that gorgeous stage. And so we're really going to try to utilize the space and light and sound and feeling energy as its own life in the show, its own character.
Yeah, for years the Master Masons did their rituals in that room. That's why it's a stage. So, you know.
Ooh. I'm starting to get a little
ceremonial magic. Yeah.
Well, if people are out there and they want to come see Frankenstein, where can they go? How can they get tickets? What are the dates?
You can find tickets for Frankenstein at hcfta.org. It is the Hoagland Center website. They are on sale. The show dates are October 10th, 11th, and 12th, and 17th, 18th, and 19th. Friday and Saturday shows are at 7:30, and then there's matinee performances on both of those Sundays.
Well, I just want to thank you both for being here, and I'm so excited to see what people have to say about Frankenstein, and this will be really fun. So before we go, anything else you want to add or a note you want to leave us on?
We have a guitarist named Marley Goller. They are doing original music for this performance. I believe they're also going to play a variety of instruments. We've been referring to them as the guitarist. That's the primary instrument they'll be playing. But so we're going to have original music as well, which is just so fun.
They use effects to make the guitar sound different ways. And I was talking to them on the stage when I saw them the first time in the rehearsal. And we were talking about what pedals we like and all that. And they had to break me away. Ted, we have to rehearse. Talking about pedals. But, you know, there's all kinds of things you can do. And they have quite a few designer pedals in their chain. And it's going to sound great.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. Well, I know this will make spooky season very fun. And I'm going to wish you all good luck and break every leg.
Thank you so much, B. We appreciate it.
If you missed part of today's show, you can listen again tonight at 10 p.m.